This is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, Mario Ritter Jr. has a report about the Taliban's move to bar Afghan women from working in non-governmental organizations. Brian Lynn presents this week's science report. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
On December 24th, the Taliban government of Afghanistan barred Afghan women from working in non-governmental organizations. The ban resulted in the suspension of many aid operations and services because organizations said they could not or would not work without the female workers. Aid agencies warn that hundreds of thousands of people have been hurt in the weeks since the Taliban announced the policy. The aid groups also say that if the ban continues, living conditions and economic problems will continue to worsen. Aid agencies and NGOs, or non-governmental organizations, have been important since the Taliban took control of the country in August 2021. As a result, international banking and finance organizations suspended international financing services and cut off money supplies. These suspensions hurt the economy even more after years of war. 11 major international aid groups and some smaller ones suspended all operations after the Taliban banned women from working for NGOs. Many others reduced their efforts. UN Women, the United Nations Office for Gender Equality, said after the ban, only 14% of international NGOs were operating normally. UN agencies have continued some operations. The World Food Program, or WFP, provided food or payments to 13 million people, about 25% of the population, in December and early January. The Associated Press reports that enforcement of the ban has been uneven. Some women have been able to continue working. However, the International Red Cross, or IRC, has suspended all its operations. That means 165,000 people did not receive its health services over 2 weeks following the ban. The IRC supports more than 100 health centers in 11 provinces, including 30 mobile health teams. Samira Syed Rahman is with the International Rescue Committee, an aid agency. She said her organization provides the only health care that some women have access to. She said parts of Afghanistan have no medical centers. The IRC says it helps families displaced by war and natural disasters. It provides water, shelter, and necessities. The group reported that it helped more than 6 million people in a one-year period ending in 2022. Kayan Salarkia is with the aid group Save the Children, which suspended its activities in Afghanistan on December 25th. Children's lives are hanging in the balance, Salarkia said. The UN estimates 1 million children under the age of 5 will likely face a severe lack of food this year. Salarkia said it was especially important to get enough of the right food in the first 100 days of a baby's life. Before suspending its services, Save the Children said it was providing classes for children, immunization, and child protection. Without its support, the group said, children will be forced to marry or forced to work. Last June, a powerful earthquake struck eastern Afghanistan, killing more than 1,000 people. A team of female doctors and nurses deployed to mountainous areas to treat people. When they got to one place, they found that the men had been treated, but not the women. The women had stayed inside their tents because there were no women aid workers. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
NASA's James Webb Space Telescope has made its first confirmation of an exoplanet. An exoplanet is a planet that orbits a star outside our solar system. The American Space Agency says the exoplanet is almost exactly the same size as Earth. Researchers from the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory in Maryland examined new data collected by the Webb to make the confirmation. Past observations made by another NASA telescope provided some evidence that the exoplanet existed, but the Webb's confirmation made the discovery official. The other space telescope is called the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, or TESS. TESS was launched in 2018 with the goal of discovering additional planets outside our solar system. The exoplanet has been named LHS-475b. The researchers said it is quite close to Earth for an exoplanet. It sits about 41 light-years away in the constellation Octans. A light-year is the distance light travels in 1 year. Exoplanets are difficult for telescopes to identify. One reason is that bright light from the stars they orbit can hide them. The search process includes observing drops in the light level of stars. Such drops could be caused by a planet passing or transiting in front of a star. Researchers said the Webb was able to confirm the existence of the exoplanet using the transiting observation method. They said the confirmation came quickly after just 2 transit events. NASA has said the Webb telescope was developed to be able to provide a high level of detail in its observations. It is equipped with the latest technology to observe infrared waves. These waves are a kind of electromagnetic energy that cannot be seen with the human eye. NASA says the telescope's instruments can find infrared waves through gas and dust to observe distant objects. Jacob Lustig-Yeager helped lead the research. He said in a statement that the telescope data made it easy to make a clear confirmation. There is no question that the planet is there. The finding was recently presented at a conference of the American Astronomical Society in Seattle, Washington. Another leader of the team, Kevin Stevenson, added that he found the confirmation impressive because the exoplanet is small and rocky, which makes identification more difficult. Of all NASA's operating telescopes, only the Webb is equipped to collect information on the atmospheres of exoplanets. But in this case, the researchers said they do not have enough data to confirm what kind of atmosphere LHS 475b has. Scientists generally use computer models and telescope data to study the atmospheres of exoplanets. Another member of the research team, Aaron May, said the Webb telescope can easily identify a series of different molecules. But we can't yet make any definitive conclusions about the planet's atmosphere, she added. While the researchers said they cannot confirm what is present in the exoplanet's atmosphere, they are very sure about what is not present. For example, LHS 475b cannot have a thick atmosphere that is mostly methane, Lustig-Yeager said. The team even noted it is possible that the exoplanet has no atmosphere at all. Some of the available data suggests the exoplanet may have an atmosphere of pure carbon dioxide. But the researchers said they plan to gather more data in future observations to help them learn about atmospheric conditions. NASA says it has so far confirmed more than 5,000 exoplanets. But Lustig-Yeager noted that the Webb telescope is much better equipped to discover small, rocky exoplanets. He said this will likely lead to a lot more exoplanet confirmations. And Lustig-Yeager added, "We have barely begun scratching the surface of what their atmospheres might be like." I'm Brian Lynn.
Now, Brian Lynn joins me on the program to talk more about this week's science report. Thanks for being here, Brian.
You're welcome, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
This week, your report dealt with a new discovery made by NASA's James Webb Telescope. Our listeners might remember a few stories we did last year when the telescope first started sending its first images back to Earth. They were very colorful and detailed. And I know NASA has said the Webb is the most powerful space telescope ever built. What can you tell us about the process that led to the latest discovery?
Yes, so the story describes how the Webb was able to make its first confirmation of an exoplanet. These are planets that orbit a star outside our own solar system, so they're very distant from Earth. The Webb is equipped with instruments to observe distant objects through dense gas and dust that exists in space.
And what specifically is the telescope looking for?
Well, in this case, NASA explained that the telescope's instruments were seeking to observe infrared waves. These are a kind of electromagnetic energy that cannot be seen with the human eye. So with this technology, scientists say the Webb can identify and confirm exoplanets more easily than other operating telescopes.
The story points out that exoplanets are generally difficult to identify, mainly because bright light from stars they orbit can hide them. So what methods do researchers use to find them?
So to do that, telescopes observe drops in light levels given off by stars. This drop in light can be caused by a planet passing in front of a star. It was through this method that the Webb confirmed the existence of the exoplanet. And again, this method is not new, but NASA says the abilities of the Webb make these exoplanets easier to identify, so the researchers say they are looking forward to many more discoveries in the future.
Thanks for that explanation, Brian, and thanks for joining me today on the program.
Sure. Thank you, Ashley.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. On April 9, 1865, Confederate General Robert E. Lee surrendered his army to Union General Ulysses Grant. Within weeks, the Civil War would be over. When people in Washington learned of Lee's surrender, they hurried to the White House. The crowd wanted to hear from President Abraham Lincoln. The speech he gave would be one of his last, as Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe explained in our series.
President Lincoln spoke several days after General Lee's surrender. The people expected a victory speech, but Lincoln gave them something else. Already, he was moving forward from victory to the difficult times ahead. The Southern Rebellion was over. Now, he faced the task of rebuilding the Union. Lincoln did not want to punish the South. He wanted to rejoin the ties that the Civil War had broken. So, when the people of the North expected a speech of victory, he gave them a speech of reconstruction instead. On the night of April 11th, Lincoln appeared before a crowd outside the White House. He held a candle in one hand and his speech in the other.
"Fellow citizens," Lincoln said, "we meet this evening not in sorrow, but in gladness of heart. The surrender of the main army of the Confederacy gives hope of a righteous and speedy peace. The joy cannot be held back. By these recent successes, we have had pressed more closely upon us the question of reconstruction. We all agree," Lincoln continued, "that the so-called seceded states are out of their correct relation with the Union. We also agree that what the government is trying to do is get these states back into their correct relation. I believe it is not only possible, but in fact easier to do this without deciding the legal question of whether these states have ever been out of the Union. Finding themselves safely at home, it would be of no importance whether they had ever been away.
There was cheering and applause when President Lincoln finished, but less than when he began. The speech had been too long and too detailed to please the crowd. Lincoln, however, believed it a success. He hoped he had made the country understand one thing, the great need to forget hatred and bitterness in the difficult time of rebuilding that would follow the war. The president continued to discuss his ideas on Reconstruction over the next few days. On Friday, April 14th, he agreed to put this work aside for a while. In the afternoon, he took his wife, Mary, for a long drive away from the city. In the evening, they would go to the theater.
One of the popular plays of the time, called Our American Cousin, was being performed at Ford's Theater, not far from the White House. The Secretary of War did not want the Lincolns to go alone. He ordered an army officer to go with them. The President and Mrs. Lincoln sat in special seats at Ford's Theater. The presidential box was above and to one side of the stage. A guard always stood outside the door to the box. On this night, however, the guard did not remain. He left the box unprotected.
President Lincoln settled down in his seat to enjoy the play. As he did so, a man came to the door of the box. He carried a gun in one hand and a knife in the other. The man entered the presidential box quietly. He slowly raised the gun. He aimed it at the back of Lincoln's head. He fired. Then the man jumped from the box to the stage, 3 meters below. Many in the theater recognized him. He was an actor, John Wilkes Booth. Booth broke his leg when he hit the stage floor, but he pulled himself up, shouted, "Sic semper tyrannis," thus ever to tyrants, and ran out the door. He got on a horse and was gone.
The attack was so quick that the audience did not know what had happened. Then a woman shouted, "The president has been shot." Lincoln had fallen forward in his seat, unconscious. Someone asked if it was possible to move him to the White House. A young army doctor said no. The president's wound was terrible. He would die long before reaching the White House. So Lincoln was moved to a house across the street from Ford's Theater. A doctor tried to remove the bullet from the president's head. He could not. Nothing could be done except wait. The end was only hours away.
Cabinet members began to arrive, while wild reports spread through the city. The Confederates had declared war again. There was fighting in the streets. An official of the War Department described the situation. The extent of the plot was unknown. From so horrible a beginning, what might come next? How far would the bloody work go? The safety of Washington must be looked after. The people must be told. The assassin and his helpers must be captured.
Early the next morning, April 15th, Abraham Lincoln died. A prayer was said over his body. His eyes were closed. The news went out by telegraph to cities and towns across the country. People read the words, but could not believe them. To millions of Americans, Abraham Lincoln's death was a personal loss. They had come to think of him as more than the President of the United States. He was a trusted friend. People hung black cloth on their doors in sorrow. Even the South mourned for Lincoln, its former enemy. Southern General Joe Johnston said, "Mr. Lincoln was the best friend we had. His death is the worst thing that could happen for the South."
Messages of regret came from around the world. British labor groups said they could never forget the things Lincoln had said about working people, things such as, "The strongest tie of human sympathy should be one uniting all working people of all nations and tongues." A group representing hundreds of French students sent this message: "In President Lincoln, we mourn a fellow citizen. There are no longer any countries shut up in narrow frontiers. Our country is everywhere where there are neither masters nor slaves. Wherever people live in liberty or fight for it, we look to the other side of the ocean to learn how a people which is known how to make itself free knows how to preserve its freedom." The assassination of Abraham Lincoln touched the imagination of America's writers. Many tried to put their feelings into words. Walt Whitman wrote several poems of mourning. Here is part of one of them: "O Captain, my Captain."
"Here, Captain, dear father, this arm beneath your head. It is some dream that on the deck you've fallen cold and dead. My captain does not answer. His lips are pale and still. My father does not feel my arm. He has no pulse nor will. The ship is anchored safe and sound, its voyage closed and done. From fearful trip the victor ship comes in with object won. Exult, O shores, and ring, O bells, but I, with mournful tread, walk the deck my captain lies, fallen cold and dead."
Abraham Lincoln was assassinated in the spring. That is the time of year when lilac plants burst into flower throughout much of the United States. One of Walt Whitman's most beautiful poems in honor of Lincoln is called "When Lilacs Last in the Dooryard Bloomed." Here is part of that poem:
"When lilacs last in the dooryard bloomed, and the great star early drooped in the western sky in the night, I mourned, and yet shall mourn with ever-returning spring. Ever-returning spring, Trinity sure to me you bring, lilac, blooming perennial and drooping star in the west, and thought of him I love. Coffin that passes through lanes and streets, through day and night with the great cloud darkening the land, with the countless torches lit, with the silent sea of faces and the unbared heads, with the tolling, tolling bells' perpetual clang. Here, coffin that slowly passes, I give you my sprig of lilac."
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.